Let's see. Should we do 40 together first, or go backwards? Or? Let's go front to back. Let's go frontwards. So text 38. While Sanjaya was thus speaking, Sri Narada, the powerful devotee of the Lord, appeared on the scene carrying his tambura. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers received him properly by getting up from their seats and offering obeisances. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, O godly personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt, who is grief-stricken by the loss of all of her sons. Text 40. Karandhara ivapare Bhagavan Paradarkshaka. Atha Bhadhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Karandhara Ivapare Bhagavan Paradarshaka Atha Badhasa Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Karandhara Ivapare Bhagavan Paradarshaka Atha Badhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Vapare Bhagavan Paradarshaka Atha Badhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Karandhara Ivapare Karan Bharadarshaka Atha Badhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Atha Bhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Karnadhara Ivapare Bhagavan Bhattadarshaka Atha Bhase Bhagavan Narado Muni Satama Karnadhara, captain of the ship, Eva, like, Apare, in the extensive oceans, Bhagavan, representative of the Lord, Paradarshaka, one who can give directions to the other side, Ata, thus, Abhabhase began to say, Bhagavan, the godly personality, Narada, the great sage Narada, Munisattama, the greatest among the devotee philosophers. Translation, you are like a captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination. Thus addressed, the godly personality Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. Purport. There are different types of philosophers, and the greatest of all of them are those who have seen the personality of Godhead and have surrendered themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Among all such pure devotees of the Lord, Devarsi Narda is the chief, and therefore he has been described here as the greatest of all philosopher devotees. Unless one has become a sufficiently learned philosopher by hearing the Vedanta philosophy from a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot be a learned philosopher devotee. One must be very faithful, learned, and renounced. Otherwise, one cannot be a pure devotee. A pure devotee of the Lord can give us direction toward the other end of nescience. Devarshi Narada used to visit the palace of Maharaj Yudhisthira because the Pandavas were all pure devotees of the Lord. And the Devarshi was always ready to give them good counsel whenever needed. Shakaya Chakshu Shamani Tambina Tasma Shri Vema Shri Chaitanya Manavisham Sabi Damina Bhutale Swam Rupa Kadamaham Dadati Swapanantikam Namaste Kiri Rajaya Shri Kovatana Swami Shesha Kesha Nashaya Paramananda Dayani Vanchakabu Truvishal Kipasmi Vichal Paditanam Bhavani Bhavishmil Ma. So here, this chapter is describing different gurus. We've heard the Dhritarashtra getting instructions from Vidura and acting upon those instructions. And now we're being introduced to Narada Muni rather quickly. Yudhisthira approaching Sanjaya in the morning. Where is Dhritarashtra? Where is Gandhari? You know, they're so dependent on me. I have caused them so much trouble in my life, you know, just by me being born, by me and my brothers being born, we've given them so much trouble. So humble he is, you know, when actually it may be the other way around, the cousin brothers, but such a humble way, and he felt so responsible. We've heard chapter after chapter in this first canto of Yudhisthira's struggle with this, with his struggle to take over the kingship in an aggressive way, aggressively taking it. And so he feels so responsible, and then in the old age of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, he feels again that responsibility is to care for them. And so he's so distraught that when he wakes up in the morning, he doesn't see the king on the throne. He was so indebted, or he was so guilty, he felt, that he still allowed Dhritarashtra to sit on the throne as being the king. But as we heard from Vidura, very strong words, that, what are you doing? Like a dog. You didn't deserve that seat. And you're eating remnants of that person who's killed your sons. So you're like a dog. Get out. But Yudhisthira, Ajatasatru, is another name for Yudhisthira, which means he who the birth of an enemy never happened. No one is born who is ever his enemy, because he is so benevolent and merciful. So he never held this against Dhritarashtra. So now he's grieving, and usually when we grieve over something, we want to approach, we want to get shelter, we take shelter of someone or something. And so at this wonderful opportunity, Narada Muni appears. You know, sometimes Narada is described as a transcendental spaceman. He can appear and disappear by his will. And Krishna is always directing Narada to go to the places where his presence is necessary. So he appears on the scene, and Yudhisthira just, you know, floods out his grief. Oh, Narada Muni, oh, thank God you're here. This is what's happening. You know, what am I going to do now? Was I harsh to him? What have I done? And then we'll begin to hear Narada. But this description of Narada And by the way, the topic for today given is the role of the guru. And this description of Narada as Karnadura, as the captain of a ship, is significant. And it's been repeated throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam in different places. Actually, in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, we hear this same word, Karnadura, used in describing Suta Goswami in the next to the last verse of the first chapter. To set that scene, or to understand that scene, these sages, they assembled together, and their intention is very good. Let's have this grand sacrifice to help the king to hold off the onslaught of Kali Yuga. This is our intention, very good intentions. And of course, being brahmanas, their propensity is for sacrifice, to do these wonderful, beautiful sacrifices of offering very opulent things to the Lord. But when they started it, it was thwarted. You know, usually these sacrifices have a nice fire and a ghee is put in, very beautiful, colorful performance or execution of this sacrifice. And so, but instead of, you know, nice flames coming out, it was just smoke, thick black smoke. And so they thought, well, what are we doing wrong? Something must be amiss. What should we do? So they elected amongst themselves the most learned Suta Goswami, and they said, use the same Karandara, Karanadara Ivaranavaram. We think we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all good qualities of a human being. So this Karanadara, captain of the ship, ocean of Kali, this is a repeated theme to help us understand a complex topic, very simple terms. So the complex topic is, why are we here, and where are we going, how do we get there? So the ocean of Kali is the description of this material world. And in general, when we think of ocean, we think we're kind of looking from the outside in. You know, we're on the beach, and the ocean looks very nice. No, you know, the ocean is very nice. You know, why are we so afraid of the ocean? But if you are put out in the middle of the ocean, then it is very difficult and frightful. Even the best of oceans, you know, you look around and around, there's nothing but ocean. And then you can't even see the danger beneath, or potential danger. And so it's very frightening if you're somehow or other shipwrecked or plane crashed or faulty parachute or whatever. You're out in the middle of the ocean, and it's very frightful. So that is compared to this Kali Yuga, where there is no real shelter. Because in the middle of the ocean, there's no shelter. There's no beach, there's no trees, there's no boat, there's nothing out there. It's just you in the element of water, and the other elements perhaps coming to attack you. So that is compared to the material world. Well, there's no shelter, there's no permanent shelter. The inherent nature of the material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It is temporary and is full of misery. So even if you think you have a shelter, it does not last. And so this Kali Yuga, this material nature, this material world is like this ocean. And so how do we cross the ocean? What do you need? What is the first thing you need to cross an ocean? A boat. You need a boat. So, in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna explaining to, or giving Krishna conscious understanding to Uddhava, Krishna also uses the same Karanadara term, and he explains the different things needed. Nudehamayam sulabam sadurlabam plavam sakalpam guru karandaram mayanukulena nabasvateritam punam bhavam dim natarit saatmaha. The human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically obtained by the laws of nature, although it is a very rare achievement. So we're starting first on the level that we're talking about human beings here. This human body can be compared to a perfectly constructed boat for having the spiritual master as a captain and the instructions of the personality of Godhead as favorable winds and impelling it on its course. Considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize this human form to cross the ocean material existence must be considered to be like the killer of his own self. So we have this boat. So what is the next thing? If you put a boat in the ocean, what is the next thing you need? You need a captain. So this captain is your spiritual is the guru. It's like the guru. And so the captain, he's directing. Just like, of course, nowadays things are different with technology, but when you're looking at boats, you know, the operation of boats in bygone ages, it takes a whole lot of effort to get a boat going correctly. You know, you need people to hoist the sails, you need, you know, rudder control, you need all these different things going on simultaneously, and it takes a direction. So like our body, the boat, has what? Has all this crew members of our senses, our mind and intelligence. They're always pulling the body or our boat here and there. And so the guru, the spiritual master, he focuses all of that to the right goal of plying through the water. Otherwise, a boat on the ocean, you know, that's not enough. That's not sufficient. Because the waves, if you go against the tide or in the wrong direction, you'll be capsized or you'll be thrown into rocks. You need guidance. You need that guidance. And then, and also the captain is not sufficient. What is the next thing you need? You may have a perfect boat and a great captain, but what else do you need after that? Yes? Yeah, you need winds. You need propulsion. You need some direction. So the guru is taking advantage of the favorable winds of the Vedas as the guide. So therefore we say Guru Shastra Sadhu. All, yes? Well, yeah, Guru Shastra Sadhu, they are obviously to be a sadhu, they must be consulting with scripture. But in this case, in this verse here, the favorable winds are the Vedas, the mother Vedas, as sometimes also said. So the guru is taking advantage of these Vedas or spiritual knowledge to direct the body of the boat or the body of the soul through this terrible ocean of Kali. And so all of these things must work together. And it's so nice to see. Now, I was one of my I had a service many years ago where I would find excerpts from Srila Prabhupada and I would compile them for a devotee, and he would give like classes and you know, and the idea was that we would find these excerpts of Prabhupada where it was just extraordinary. The spoken word is sometimes a much more powerful deliverance of the knowledge than just the written word, although both are there. But when you hear the force of the words behind them, it gives new light into the subject matter. So very early on, Srila Prabhupada was in New York City, Lower Manhattan, Lower East Side of Manhattan, and just starting to his Krishna consciousness movement, no disciples, or if there were some regular followers, they were, you know, somewhat committed, maybe not fully committed. And so he's trying to teach this concept of guru to them. And using this same example, the captain of a ship, and he's speaking on the verse from the Mahabharata that, you know, to get just philosophical understanding, you can't obtain absolute truth. To consult many books, many scriptures, you cannot attain the absolute truth. You must have a person. There must be a person, a Mahajan, to give you that. So he's explaining this. And again, the crowd he's speaking to, you know, derelicts, some of them, hippies, barely just getting there in the morning. So although I don't know how clear this will come through, I do have the translation. And how many devotees here regularly listen to Prabhupada in his lectures? So, you know, maybe a third of you. So one thing about hearing Prabhupada is a very powerful thing to actually hear his voice. You know, Prabhupada is our founder, Acharya, and daily we worship him. We read his books. We are followers of Srila Prabhupada. But then to hear him, it kind of creates a little more of a relationship with him, to hear his voice, to hear his force in his voice, or his, you know, different intonations in the way he's delivering Krishna consciousness. It's very inspiring. But I will admit, in the beginning, if we're not accustomed, it is very difficult to understand Srila Prabhupada's voice or his accent. So I apologize if you don't understand it. What we'll do, we'll hear a little bit, and it's only a 2-minute excerpt I'm going to play. And I'll read the translation as we go. But I know you will be able to hear his emphasis on certain topics. And that's the point I'm trying to present here. So with glorification of technology, we can do this all in a cell phone even. So again, this is, he's just speaking on this Mahabharata verse, and then he's giving a very personal example of this idea of captain. Let me see, the volume is up.
Mahajana jena gatatta pantha. Just like in an unknown path, in a village, especially when there is a field. Now in the city, you can know that I have come so far because the streets are numbered and you have got the location and there are some symptoms, this house or that house. But in the country, everything, every place is of the same similar nature, the same jungle, the same field, the same grass. We do not know.
So he's saying, this is an example, he's leading up to another example. He says, just like in an unknown path in a village, if you're out in the woods somewhere, he said, especially when in a field, he said, and again, it's the broken sentences, but now in the city, you know that I have come so far because the streets are numbered and you have got the location and there are so many symptoms. So in the city, it's very, you know, okay, I'm on First Avenue. The next one is going to be what? Second Avenue, Third Avenue, Fourth Avenue. You can figure it out. But in the country, out in the woods, there's no such markers. So that's the point he's making. Then he'll give another point.
Where I am going? Or in the sea. I've got experience. Have you ever traveled in the sea? No. But while I was coming from India, so everywhere I see a round only, round of water. I do not know which way this ship is proceeding. You see? But they have got a chart. They have got a chart. By latitude, longitude, by time, and by chart, they are calculating. Now, I was asking the captain, where we have come. You are saying in the Mediterranean Sea, oh, you have so many miles from Italy, we have so many miles from, like this, Tunisia. Now we are coming to Gibraltar, like this. But I was seeing all vast of water only. I was seeing just after 10 miles I shall reach, but never reached. So, that how, what are these charts? These charts are that experienced sailors, they have made the chart. The captain was also consulting that chart because it was made by experienced sailors. That is nothing. So similarly, in calculating in which way we have to find out our salvation is to follow such liberated souls.
So, again, just to go over in case we didn't understand. So he's saying the jungle, you know, you can't find your direction. And he said, similarly, the sea. And then he asks, have any of you been on the sea? No. So, but when I was coming from India, everywhere I see a round only, round of water. So when you're on a boat in the sea, you look, everything is just horizon, round, that's it. I do not know which way the ship is proceeding, you see? But they have got a chart, and Prabhupada, you know, the way his voice cracked almost, is, they've got a chart, they've got a chart. Right? By latitude, longitude, the time, and by the chart, they're calculating. Now, I was asking the captain, where have we come? He was saying, in the Mediterranean Sea. Oh, we are so many miles from Italy. We are so many miles from Tunisia. Now we are coming to Gibraltar like this. But all I was seeing was vast water only. So, captain knows where they are, and he's got the chart, and he's directing the boat. But for the passenger, sometimes it's like, I have no idea where we're going. If you let me go right now, even if we're pointing in the right direction, who knows where I'll end up. But they have the chart. They have he knows how to read the charts. So the Vedas, the Bhagavatam, the scriptures are the charts for the spiritual master. And then he says, very striking also, he's saying the charts are that experienced sailors, they have made the charts. The captain was also consulting the chart because it was made by experienced sailors. Then he says, that is nothing. So for the spiritual master, when he looks, or the guru, when he sees, or the pure devotee, advanced devotees, when they see the material world, it's nothing. It's not very difficult. And the description is, when once someone takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, that whole material, tribulating ocean just shrinks down to nothing. Just like the amount of water that is held in the footprint of a calf. You can easily cross beyond it. So this is the vision of the spiritual master, of the guru. He has the charts. He's not afraid. There's no fear, there's no difficulty in the age of Kali, in the age of quarrel, in the age of hypocrisy, when we see everything as difficult. And he guides us. He's always guiding us. And we also always have to have that guidance. We can't think that, okay, well, I'm going along nicely now. I no longer need to consult the GPS or whatever. I'm going fine. But no, the consultation always has to be there to get us where we want to go. And so this makes the spiritual master a very necessary part of our spiritual life. The guru and the role of the guru. What is the role of the guru? He is our captain of our ship. So certainly we have the very experienced, wonderful captain of Srila Prabhupada guiding us through Krishna consciousness by his writings. And then his followers are also able to guide us like that. And so different, the the topic of Guru is such a vast topic in itself. I kind of wanted to just focus on that, but we'll give a couple little more information. Many times Prabhupada would quote this one verse from the Mukunda Upanishad. This became one of his maybe primary verses on Guru. Tad vijnanartam sa guru meva abhigachet samitpanin stotriyam brahmanishtam. To understand these things properly, one must humbly approach with firewood in hand, that means there's offering of service, to the spiritual master who is learned in the Vedas and firmly devoted to the absolute truth. And Prabhupada would always emphasize this word, eva bhigachet. Must. You must do it. If you want to cross the ocean, you have to have a captain. It's just impossible. And sometimes it's described that if you're thinking of crossing the ocean and you hold on to the tail of a dog, what kind of fool can you be? Like, that's kind of what we're doing. We're thinking, yes, I'll take shelter of some thing in the material realm. I take shelter of family, friends, or whatever. But there's no full shelter there. They're described as fallible soldiers. It's like if you have a bunch of nutcracker soldiers as your army, there's no hope of defeating or being protected by them. So the spiritual master, you must do it. If this is what you want, if you want to cross the ocean, you must have a captain. You must have a spiritual master. It is essential. Sometimes Prabhupada was humorous with a friend of his, Dr. Patel. And for those who listen to Prabhupada's morning walks, you've become familiar with Dr. Patel. They have, you know, when you hear Giriraj Swami speak about Dr. Patel in a very affectionate way, you know, it's very nice. The relationship was sometimes frightening for the disciples that, you know, Dr. Patel always gets Prabhupada's blood boiling sometimes, you know, with his arguments and his different, but sometimes it was very sweet. So here Prabhupada is giving a qualification of the disciple and to the guru, and which in itself is a qualification of guru. So Prabhupada is speaking, Mahaprabhu has taught us to remain a fool and rascal before spiritual master, and that is the first qualification of the disciple. Always remain a fool and rascal. Guru mora mukha, guru mora mukha dekhi, karida ashasana. My Guru Maharaj has chastised me, considering me fool number one. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, my Guru Maharaj saw me first class fool, and therefore he chastised me. That is the standard of guru and shishya. A guru, as Chanaka Pandit says, if you pat, there are so many bad things. And if you chastise, there are so many good things. So he's again, not fully described in his words, but he's quoting a verse from Chanaka Pandit that the guru's role is not to always pat the disciple. So here, Yudhisthira is coming broken-hearted, you know, to Narada Muni and distressed that, you know, where is my uncle? Where is my aunt? And Narada Muni, you would think, okay, well, you know, in just, you know, social convenience or whatever, you would think, oh, you would hug him. Oh, there, my dear. Please don't be sad. You know, this and that. So the padding is not always good. Oh, yes, everything you're doing is fine. You're very good boy, very good girl. That is not the role of the guru. But he says, then there must be the lalane bhavo dosh tadane, the chastisement, the rod, Of course, it's figurative, but there's a chastisement. So Ishwar Puri, you know, and again, this is pastime, but Ishwar Puri says, "Oh, Murkha, you are a fool. Just chant Hare Krishna." So the guru's role is to be very clear in Krishna consciousness. It's not a fanciful thing or a mystical, you know, a foggy mystical thing where when we hear about guru, oh yes, the conceptions of guru are, you know, you climb up a mountain and you get up there and then there's some word or some spoken thing and then poof, you're just in heaven on earth or something. You're just fully realized by some mystical thing. But it's a very clear transmission, very clear transmission of knowledge is there, that it's not foggy. It's very clear. A couple of weeks ago, we were reading the pastime of Srivas Thakur and everybody in lament. The child has died. But Srivas Thakur, the force of the Absolute Truth delivering that Absolute Truth was really the cessation of their lamentation, not the patchwork you may have to do by consoling and consoling and consoling. What is it that's, you know, the healthcare industry or whatever, this depression is always consoling. Yes, you're doing so good. But it's, you need some force, like, boom, wake up, you know, get off your lamentation platform. You're not this body. You're not these senses, this mind. You're spirit soul. You're meant to serve Krishna. Get up and do it. Prabhupada said, therefore, either son or disciple, you must always chastise them and not pat them. Oh, you are a very good boy. You are nothing. You are doing nothing. This is the business of guru, to find out a fault. Although there is no fault, the guru's business is to where is the fault. That is guru's business. even in business training, managerial training, it's all that same idea is there. That never be complacent about where you're at, where you're performing. Because once you do that, then things become slack and they start falling below our standard. So the guru's business certainly is to encourage us in our devotional service, but also always, well, doing very good, but do this now, do this. It helps us along. Just like if the captain of the ship is saying, okay, we're doing very nicely, let's just take a break. Very quickly, the one wave, you're off course. You know, it's one wave. So it's a very careful situation, careful guidance always. So that's the side of guru that we hear, very forceful, very important, unswerving. But then Prabhupada also speaks many times of the very easy qualification, or very easy qualification of guru. And this is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya is on his pilgrimage, going through South India, through India, just village to village, chanting Hare Krishna. And one devotee was very enthusiastic. He was a householder. Very enthusiastic. Oh, Lord Chaitanya, thank you for coming. I just want to go with you. I'm going to go with you. I'm giving everything up. My wife, my family, everything. And Lord Chaitanya spoke something very important that Prabhupada would, again, when he speaks on guru, he would always, many times he would quote this verse. Yari deke tara kaha Krishna upadesh. Amara gana guru hana tara edesh. Now this is also a qualification of guru. What is it? Is it so many years of study, so many of this, so much of that? No, just whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. That's it. of course, we know to be able to tell people about Krishna clearly and concisely, yeah, it does take our efforts. But in a very simple way. Prabhupada is saying that this is the key ingredient. That whoever you meet, wherever you go, you tell them about Krishna. And here, and Prabhupada is speaking to family members in Bombay in 1975, and he incorporates this verse into their lives. So this is Guru. Suppose you're a family member. So many living entities, your sons, your daughters-in-law, or children, you can become the Guru. Exactly like this, you can sit down in the evening and talk about Bhagavad Gita. Yari deke tara kaha Krishna upadesh. You haven't got to manufacture something. The instruction is there. You simply repeat and let them hear. You become Guru. It is not difficult at all. So that is our preaching. We do not want to become alone Guru, but we want to preach in such a way that every person, they become Guru in his surroundings. Tara edesh, in their land, that place. They're teachers. They're becoming teachers and gurus. Anyone can do that. Even a coolie. He can also. He has got family. He has got friends. So even though he is illiterate, he can hear the instruction of Krishna and he can preach the same. This we want. So this Prabhupada's other understanding, you know, he gives everything. Yeah, Eva Bhagachet, you must accept Guru. What are the qualifications of Guru? He must be very strict, very, you know, cutting, absolute truth. But everybody can do it. It's also, the other side is there too. Yari Karai, Krishna Upadesh. Tell everyone you meet about Krishna. And it's by that, by your doing that, Krishna also gives us intelligence how to do it. If we're in that right mood of wanting to spread Krishna consciousness. So, these are some ideas. The role of Guru. We can end here with any discussion, questions or comments. Hare Krishna. Yes, Samrita?
Prabhupada?
Yeah.
Not that he should always be complimenting or something, but Prabhupada was so encouraging of everything.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it wasn't one-sided presentation, but that's just one mood. Just like I said, this guru topic is such a huge topic that we can't discuss in one meeting, but the guru is encouraging, and he's always lifting us, and he's always guiding us. So that's there as well, certainly. You know, when we hear Prabhupada actual interaction, sometimes we read something, we think, oh yeah, Prabhupada is very heavy. But when you hear him say it, that's why I'm saying, to hear Prabhupada's lectures is very helpful. When you hear him say it in his mood, sometimes he's jovial, sometimes he's joking, sometimes he's very heavy. So we have to have a tenor. The tenor of the singers, they're like the mid-range persons. They're not the soprano, they're not the alto, they're the tenor. They kind of keep things focused in the center. So when we hear all of Prabhupada's teachings, we have to always come to that, you know, what was Prabhupada's main point? What was his main focus? To make devotees, to make Krishna conscious persons, to give them Krishna and to uplift them, and for them to then uplift those around them. And so that's, you know, certainly we have unending encouragement in that. Is that all right? Yeah? Okay. Vaishnav?
I have a question in my mind, Prabhu. So if we, like, share our minds, our faults with Guru too much, then, like, we are bothering him?
What was that?
Like, we are sharing too much. Oh, I have this problem, I have that problem, I have this fault, I have that fault.
Well, again, it's a relationship, it's a personal relationship. Just like, you know, we hear Narada Muni just pops in here, right? But actually there's a prior relationship of Yudhisthira and Narada Muni. If we remember, right after the Rajasuya sacrifice, Narada Muni was there. And Yudhisthira took advantage of his association, and they sat down, and the entire seventh canto is a discussion between Yudhisthira and Narada Muni. So there's a previous relationship there. And there we hear Narada Muni, he's going through this whole history of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. And then at the end of that, there's this glorification of Prahlad. That, oh, he's such an exalted personality. And Narada Muni was thinking, as he was saying this, that, oh, Yudhisthira, he may be feeling slighted. He may be feeling he's in not a very good position. And so Narada Muni speaks two verses glorifying the Pandavas. That, oh, you know, don't feel sorry. You know, you have Krishna as your friend, your advisor. You know, he's always with you. So it's a personal relationship. It's not just the guru comes in heavy, 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 and then he leaves. But it's a personal relationship. But when we do go to the guru, we need to accept that at that particular time, place, circumstance, whatever he says, I will accept. Prabhupada gives the example that the spiritual master is like, in the rainy season, sometimes there's waterfalls and sometimes it's dry. Right? And this is in the description of autumn in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is likened to be the spiritual master. Sometimes he's very flowing and sometimes he's subdued. But we shouldn't judge him by that, whether he's very flowing or subdued in particular. He has his own, personality. He has a person as well. And so as we relate to him, we will get... So if we go to him with our mind problems, we may not... Just like in ISKCON in the struggling years, there was examples of we'd go to the spiritual master. How should I become a businessman? I'm a grihastha now. It was just like when we were kind of departing from everyone living in a temple to people starting to move out and become more congregation, devotees, having their own businesses and things. And so a lot of the times, these questions of how do I do the business? Don't go to the guru asking how to start a business. How to maintain, how do I keep my wife, how do I keep my husband happy? Don't go to the guru for these questions. We go to the guru for, enlightenment and Krishna consciousness and guidance in that. Well, and sometimes, again, based on that particular relationship, your relationship and the particular personality, there may be some more direction. But generally, the spiritual master is for spiritual direction. And so, what happens to Arjuna when he laments and he finally accepts Krishna? Whatever you say, I'm going to do. You are a fool. It was like, no more friendly talks. You're a fool. You're lamenting for things you should not be lamenting for. So, yes, we can go to the guru with our problems. That is one of the loving exchanges between devotees, that you can reveal your mind and confidence to this person. But don't do it in such a way that you're expecting a particular response. It may not always come to you in that. You may be thinking, okay, I have this trouble with this person, so let me go get some ammunition from the guru of what I'm doing is good. So that's not his role. The role is not that, to give you ammunition or to bolster your... He is to give you Krishna consciousness and to give you absolute truth. So we have to be prepared for that. He's kind of like distressed. He's like freaking out. He greets him and everything, but he immediately runs into it. I'm distressed. Where are my uncle? And then Narada Muni said, don't lament. Then he starts preaching to him absolute truth. It's not like, oh yes, let's go find them. And he gets into the same mood of distress as the disciple. No, he said, no, don't lament. This is the natural course of things. And he gives him the absolute truth, and it's very clear. So that's, you know, the key ingredient of that guru-disciple relationship is that it's personal. And for, he may give you some advice, and generally he'll say, go ask somebody who knows about, you know, fixing your car. Don't ask me how to do it. It's not that the spiritual master knows how to fix, you know, a catalytic converter, you know. You go to somebody who's expert in that. But the spiritual master, he's expert in another source of knowledge, spiritual knowledge. And so that's where we go. Yes?
As you had said that our spiritual master is the one who finds faults in us, and we are expected to listen maybe and understand. Like, I am very new over here, so I try to take inputs from everybody. And but at the same time, yesterday I think we had a class where it was we learned that we shouldn't find faults in other people. Rather see the good things about them. Focus on the good things about them.
Right.
So when I ask my friends over here, I don't get any. I mean, they tell me I'm not supposed to see faults inside you. So I mean, what is there anything in this?
Well, it's again, it's the role of the guru. It's a little different when it's peer to peer. But then again. See, we've kind of been discussing guru, and it's a whole other subject matter. What is guru? You know, is guru, you know, and sometimes we have the misconception that guru means that person who gives you initiation. That's your guru and that's it. There's no other. But, you know, there's gurun, many times throughout the scriptures that the devotees are offering gurun, obeisances, vande gurun, shiisha bhakshtam, that it is not just this one guru who I've taken initiation from, but it is my instructing gurus. It is the other guru. There's Chaita guru. There's so many gurus. There's like a list, but they're basically three. There's Chaita guru, Diksha guru, and Shiksha guru. Chaita guru expands into many different gurus. The Vartma Padaksha guru, then there's gurus in nature. We learn things from nature. Just like the sannyasi, one of his gurus is the Madhukar, the bumblebee, is a guru, is one of the gurus for a sannyasi. That the bumblebee goes from flower to flower, takes a very little. He doesn't burden one flower and just hangs out and just sucks the life out of it. He just flower to flower to flower. So that is expansion of Chaita guru, or the Lord in the heart, or Krishna. Krishna as our guru. So that's Chaita Guru, and he appears in many forms. The Vartma Pradaksha Guru, the first person to introduce you to Krishna consciousness. And for many of us, it may be somebody who's not even a devotee. I mean, my wife, she tells me of her, you know, the first person who gave her was, you know, just some, you know, high school buddy that gave her a book. And preached about Krishna. Hey, this is cool. And I remember my first book was some girl in a science class. It's like, oh wow, this is cool. So that Krishna, Chaita Guru, is directing us. When we need something, he directs us. So there's so much instruction we can receive there. And then there's a Shiksha Guru, many instructing spiritual masters. And then there's the Diksha Guru. And your Diksha Guru may be your main source of spiritual knowledge, or it may not be. There's so many examples in history where the Shiksha Guru was a main source of knowledge for these great acharyas like Narottam or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So it's not so like territorial, like your guru said that, my guru says this, so I don't like you anymore. And it's not like that. It's Rupa Goswami, guru is one. And what does that mean? So guru is one means that there may be details a little different, but their focus and their intention is all to bring us to a higher status of Krishna consciousness. So more to the point of the question is that yeah, the guru may be chastising, but he's, you know, there are many gurus, and, you know, many of them are encouraging. But it's not their business just to chastise. Their business is to encourage and uplift. And sometimes, again, it's based on a relationship. Just like a spiritual master would never chastise somebody who can't take it, who can't understand it. So it's, you know, sometimes we see Prabhupada very lenient with some of his devotees, and some of his devotees very heavy. Because he knows, it's a personal relationship. I know if I get heavy on this person, they're going to understand it. Sometimes we need that wake up, you know, wake up, you know. Sometimes we're just so much in illusion or so much on a wrong platform of understanding that we just need somebody to shake us up a bit. And so, finding fault, you know, again, it's, when we say those words, then it's like, you know, we're looking for faults. But also, if just correcting us, if we notice something, a discrepancy in someone, it is actually the duty. Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada says it's actual criminal if we do not offer this knowledge to those who are in ignorance. We become implicated in some crime that if we don't correct the ignorance. So it's not that we're looking for it, but we're trying to help each other. Is that all right? Or...